Good afternoon, everyone. Call to order the House Committee on Rules for Monday, February 8th. We are not going to be taking up 4134 because we don't have the paperwork. So we will revisit that tomorrow, and hopefully we will have the paperwork. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4051. Divide up Representative Comp.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4051 establishes the Joint Committee on Strategic Public Policy Review, composed of Senate President, Speaker of the House, and members appointed by the President and the Speaker, including the chairs of the Interim Policy Committee, when a committee is holding meetings or deliberating on eligible policy within the jurisdiction of that chair. It specifies members' terms of service and compensation. It directs the legislative administrator to provide support. It specifies committee public policy review process. It directs the committee to select between 2 and 4 eligible policies for review, and the committee shall prepare written recommendations that call for combination of the following types of review: establishment of a task force, request for public policy audit by legislative fiscal office, division of audits or other state agency study, legislative council to review all administrative rules related to public administrative rules related to the policy under review and report back to the joint committee, specifies factors to be addressed in the review of the report and policy by the committee, and authorizes committee to introduce legislation to address findings. There is an emergency clause on the measure. There is no revenue impact, Madam Chair. We do not have a fiscal impact on the measure as is.
Thank you, Erin. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee, good afternoon. My name is Betty Comp. I serve House District 22. I brought this bill forward last session, but it came late in the session, and it was passed unanimously by the Rules Committee, and I can't remember what part of the month of May it was already, but when it got to the Senate really didn't have time to really digest it, and I didn't have, well, there just wasn't the time to really work the bill, and so I have a visual aid, Madam Chair.
Absolutely.
I've been working so hard that I'm now in my stocking feet going back and forth to the House and the Senate, and it's good exercise, and Erin did a great job with the summary, so if you read your summary, I want to highlight a couple of things that senators did suggest additions to this bill. They definitely wanted to make sure, because I had inadvertently left off, that if you're studying the transportation topic, well, you would want your transportation chair working with you, the person that knows the most history, has the best background. And so we definitely added the committee chairs. And the other thing that the senators felt that was important was the amount of authority that they would have, and particularly if they wanted to ask for research with an audit. The part that was really key, though, is to have audits to make sure that they had access to LFO and LRO to get information and any agency that they're talking about. And so here I am, and but just before I close, because I know your time is valuable, I want to share why I wrote this bill. And I was very fortunate that as an older person looking for my first job at the age of 40, as a teacher, I ended up teaching in Woodburn School District. And at that time, which was in 1990, Woodburn School District was really struggling. Many, not even 20% of their students were reading at grade level. The graduation stank, and their attendance rate stank too. And so when we as a legislature now see that we're number fourth from the bottom in graduation rates and absenteeism and all these things, people come to me and they go, well, what happened in Woodburn? How come you have some of the highest graduation rates in the state? 30 years ago, you had the lowest. And the difference is strategic planning. We looked at an issue. We said, where do we want to be in 10 years? That is the vision of this. This is the purpose of this bill. And so that we're not, and I won't pick on this session, that we're not looking at a bridge over the Columbia while we're trying to fly the plane of the session. We used to tease our superintendent, do we ever get to work on this plane on the ground, or is it always going to be flying? Well, we find that here all the time. We're constantly working on big, heavy, meaty issues, and yet we don't have the resource behind us to sometimes make the best decisions. So because of my wonderful experience of knowing about strategic planning, the impact it can make, and I believe our body could really benefit from a plan like this, and bicameral, bipartisan, so that we have everybody's voice at the table, so we come with a recommendation from this committee in a unified manner. And I would take any questions and appreciate your support of this bill.
Thank you,
Representative. And did I tell you it's House Bill 4051?
Thank you. Questions? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Comp, I assume because of the schedules of presiding officers and committee chairs and stuff, that's the main reason that it would be meeting in the interim?
Yes. Yes, it is meant to meet in the interim when you're not rushed. And I originally, and I guess I shouldn't speak to this, but originally I shared that I thought that when members participate, they should be paid. And maybe this is a committee that works on committee days. I don't know, but that can be worked out as this committee, once it's formed and we pass it, once we pass it through the Senate. And I do have a lot of Senate support, and you'll see, you can see some of the co-sponsors on that bill. And I will say that our good colleague Senator Winters, who is recovering from major heart surgery, was one of the most active people in giving me additional ideas for this bill, and would be standing or sitting here with me if she could.
Other questions or comments for the good representative? All right, thank you.
Thank you, and you have a wonderful meeting, and I'm going to general government.
Excellent. I have Devin Bost.
Walk carefully.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak and to testify in favor of this bill.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Devin Bost.
Thank you.
And I testify that this piece of legislation is one of the most important legislative developments that this Congress will have ever produced. This bill will provide a mechanism that will allow the legislature to gain the power to be able to address problems that have occurred in many aspects of development of the government. For example, among administrative agencies that perhaps aren't doing what they should be, which is particularly a problem among in the regulation of professional licensure. I won't go into the details about some of the problems in that area, but this bill will provide a mechanism for the legislature to have the power to address those problems and to take a comprehensive, strategic approach to solving those problems.
Any questions? Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4051 and open a public hearing on House Bills 4092 and H.J.R. 203.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, H.J.R. 203 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution providing that public universities are not constitutionally prohibited from owning stock in companies, associations, or corporations. It refers the proposed amendment to the people for their approval or rejection at the next regular general election. This measure comes to you with a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment removes a reference to which stock purchases amendment would apply. There is a minimal revenue impact on the dash one, and we did receive a fiscal impact on the dash one amendment. The fiscal impact is in regards to the cost to Secretary of State for production of the voter's pamphlet, because this measure will go into the voter's pamphlet along with statements of financial impact and explanatory statements, and the cost is indeterminate until we know how many measures are going to be referred to the ballot later this fall. And then you also have, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4092. I will just direct your attention to the Dash 1 Amendment. It replaces the original measure. The Dash 1 Amendment establishes the ballot title and summary for House Joint Resolution 203. Same situation, Madam Chair, members of the committee. There is no revenue impact, and the fiscal impact, once again, is indeterminate as it is related to the cost of the production of the voter's pamphlet.
Representative Johnson and Senator Haas are signed up, so we can stand at ease for a moment until they arrive. Okay. And we're back on the record, so watch what you say. Representative Johnson, happy Dairy Day.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Great to be here with you on this beautiful day. For the record, Mark Johnson from House District 52. And it really is nice outside, by the way. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to lately. But
we enjoy our basement windowless hearing room.
It's an ice cream afternoon. I'm here today just briefly to give you some background on Senate Bill 270 that some of us were really intimately involved in over the course of the past few sessions. And if he weren't engaged otherwise, Senator Haas would be sitting next to me nodding and saying dittos to everything that I say. But one of the primary points in Senate Bill 270 was to give our universities the ability to manage their financial affairs more effectively. They felt that if they had the ability to manage their financial assets in a more hands-on way, that they would have the ability to leverage these resources, create additional resources that could be beneficial for students, for the university, and go into a lot of great benefits for the college or universities. And one of the things that was left out in the original draft was allowing the universities to actually own stock. Right now, I think the wording in the language prohibits that. But as you know, having access to equities and so forth can be a wealth-producing tool. And that really is what the sum of this bill is about. It's a technical fix. It just would allow them to invest some of their resources in instruments that will bear a higher rate of return than just simply fixed-rate CDs and or whatever else. And again, the intent here, is, as you recall, was the greater flexibility, the greater ability to magnify their philanthropy, if you will, should eventually end up in better student support services and hopefully in a reduced rate of tuition hikes, as we're all conscious of student debt and so forth. So that's the legislative intent. The original bill was how many pages?
Hundreds
of pages. I mean, watching the lawyers for the universities go over this process, and it was a months-long process because of statute that had to be rewritten and rewritten, because before, of course, they were public agencies, but now they are public, semi-private. So anyway, that's the legislative intent. So I just wanted to give you the background there. So it's nothing nefarious. It's all just a technical fix that I think will help them to be able to maximize their efforts now that they all have institutional boards.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Oh, yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. LC drafted this change, didn't they?
I assume
so. Council. Yeah. I had to parse it about four times before I realized that it probably works. If you look at subsection 3, it doesn't appear to say anything except that 1 and 2 don't apply. It says this subsection applies to stock purchased on or purchased or held by public universities before, on, or after the effective date of House Joint Resolution 203, which I think is the thing that it refers to itself. So it does deal, I think, with the issue, one of the issues you're concerned about, which is the question of whether or not they legally can own the stock they already have. And then you have to go back to the very beginning of Section 6, Sub 1, except as provided in Subsection 3 of this section, the state will not subscribe to or own any of these things. Boy, I wish there was a less convoluted way of writing this. I think it says that the universities can do the things that are otherwise prohibited in Subsection 1 and Subsection 2. Is that what you think it means, too?
Representative, I've never claimed to understand LC speak, but I'm sure that somebody, some well-placed person, that makes sense to them. So I'll just have to take their word at it. And the universities believe, I think, that the language is what they
Well, I see there's some people in the back who
and
probably
there's probably some really smart
we'll talk about
that. There are three people coming up next who might be able to answer that question.
This is not an attack on Hood River. It's an attack on LC, if I'm allowed to do that.
no offense taken.
All right, thank you. We have Janie Moffitt, Ryan Hagman, and Debbie Koretsky. I think you have a preview of one of the questions that you might be getting.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ryan Hageman, and I am the Vice President and General Counsel of Western Oregon University, but here with my colleagues speaking for all seven public universities on House Joint Resolution 203 and its companion bill. To the question that was about from Representative Barnhart, I believe that there was an amendment designed to strike some of that confusing language, and so that I don't have that in front of me, but was told that there was supposed to be an amendment about that.
I do, and okay. I'll look at it. Okay. Thank you.
So am I going to answer any other questions? I'm happy to do that as well. But I'd just like to define a problem universities face and why House Joint Resolution 203 and its companion ballot title bill provide a solution. As a public university, have begun exercising the duties, privileges, and obligations granted in Senate Bill 270, a legal question has arisen as to whether the prohibition against the state owning stock in Article 11, Section 6 of the Oregon Constitution applies. Independent legal analysis from external lawyers suggests that the prohibition might apply despite clear statutory authority described by Representative Johnson and underlying legislative intent applies. So the possibility makes it the possibility of legal risk makes it impossible for the universities to do this in good conscience or in exercising their fiduciary duties. And so that motivates why the amendment to the Constitution in House Joint Resolution 203 is necessary. So House Joint Resolution 203 and House Bill 4092 formally create the exception to the universities in Article 11, Section 6 of the Constitution, and we'll refer an amendment to the November 2016 general election to do so. I would point out there are already two exceptions in the Constitution with regard to stock in the universities, and both of them apply to higher education. One is to allow technology transfer to occur, and the other is if a university is gifted stock, that may be maintained. But this allows, per the intent of Senate Bill 270, for universities to hold a proprietary interest in the investment of equities. I'm happy to have any questions now or after.
Jamie. Why don't we go ahead and go through the panel and have questions?
Thanks. Chair Williamson and members of the committee, my name is Jamie Moffitt, and I am the Vice President for Finance and Administration at the University of Oregon. I'm here today in support of House Joint Resolution 203 and House Bill 4092. As you heard in earlier testimony, the intent of SB 270 was to provide the universities with the ability to invest in a broad range of financial instruments, including equities. The ability to invest in equities is very important. It both enables the universities to reduce our overall risk exposure through broader diversification of our investments and to increase our overall long-term returns. In one of our initial sets of public meetings at the University of Oregon, I'm going to talk a little bit about our university just to give you an example of how this is playing out. The University of Oregon Board of Trustees reviewed and adopted a treasury management policy and a related set of cash and investment operational procedures. In our case, they also discussed and approved our plan to leverage the capabilities of the investment team that sits at our university foundation to manage our long-term investments, including any investments in equities. Our foundation's been managing university endowments for us for decades, and they have an excellent track record. Over the last 5 years, the average annual return has been 8.6% per year, and over the 10-year period, which does include the Great Recession, they've earned 6.8% on average per year. Over the long term, they've been able to manage these assets very prudently and very effectively, and our goal is to leverage that expertise of their existing operations for the benefit of the university. They'll be able to do that most effectively if they can invest in a broad range of diversified investments, including equities. As I'm sure you're aware, we're facing very difficult budget pressures at our university and at all the universities today, right now, and that's due to rising costs that we're facing from labor contracts, from health insurance, from PEB, from PERS, coupled with necessary investments that we need to make around IT infrastructure, deferred maintenance for our campuses, as well as regulatory compliance. It's all putting extreme pressure on our budget. We are, as are my colleagues, continually faced with very, very difficult choices about either raising tuition or cutting costs. And as 80% of our education and general fund is invested in people, when I say cutting costs, that ends up often affecting faculty and staff jobs, as well as the quality of the education that we can provide to students. This opportunity, the opportunity to invest in equities, would help us over the long term to generate more revenue for our institutions, and that would help our overall financial positions, putting less pressure on the issues of tuition and jobs. So I'd ask you to consider that. I'm happy also to answer any questions folks might have after the presentation.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you, Chair Williamson and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Debbie Koreski from Portland State University, and I have three major points because we're talking about things that are, you know, kind of 30,000 foot complicated. All seven universities are here today requesting this very technical fix. Unfortunately, that technical fix needs to be one that we need to ask the voters for, but it is still a technical fix. It's something that the legislature did debate and talk about in Senate Bill 270. And that there's no known opposition to this bill. So I hopefully this is a, you know, good bill should pass situation, and we can move on and allow the universities to better our financial position. So thank you.
Questions or comments? Yes, Rayfield. Representative Rayfield, sorry.
I was just curious, two questions. I was just curious, number one, why Mr. Mills is not present today. Did he just take a sick day, or what happened?
Take a pass.
Maybe it's related to my tie.
Representative Rayfield and members of the committee, I would say that the universities have done an excellent job of working together. And so each bill we try to do a cross-section of the universities, and OSU is supportive of this bill, but I believe that Jock is out working on the University Venture Development Fund, of which you're a chief sponsor.
I think, and I appreciate you plugging that. The second question I have is, 15 years ago, I was a student at Western Oregon University, and I applied for a scholarship, and I was denied. And I was curious if you had any reason to why that happened.
Representative Rayfield, I do not. At the time, I was in the chancellor's office, and we didn't do such things. So.
Okay.
I do have a brand new, I will point out, I've just bought the software, so all of the scholarships are now electronically organized and much more effective, and students are able to access them with much more ease. So that was put into place about 3 months ago.
Being familiar with my background, I'm probably sure that wouldn't have helped my chances.
I think it's a bias against bow ties, frankly.
Yeah, Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, I would simply note that the amendment that was referred to a minute ago takes out the second sentence of Section 3. It now reads a lot more clearly. It simply says the universities can do it, the thing that's not allowed in the upper two parts. I wanted to simply note that in the days when the original prohibitions were adopted, I think as part of the original Constitution in 1859, what was available for investment did not have any of the protections from the regulatory system that we have now. And any investment of public funds in joint stock companies or other kinds of organizations that were available in 1859 would have been quite insane from the standpoint of using public money. That's hence the reason for those prohibitions. They're obsolete. The fact is that well-managed funds actually reduce risk. They don't increase them. And I think this is something that is a tidying up of the big bill that we did, but now a couple sessions ago, to set up the current system we have for governance of the universities. I frankly think it's a no-brainer, and I hope we do it.
Thank you. Other questions? Comments? All right. Thank you all. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4092 and HJR 203, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4092. Vice Chair Hoyle.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 4092.
Vice Chair Hoyle has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 4092. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes, yes.
Excuse me.
I was confused. I thought earlier it was said that the dash 2 replaced the bill.
The dash 1 does.
My mistake.
The dash
Thank
1
you.
Replaces section, the second
that's
sentence.
Fine.
Yeah.
That's
good.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4092 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle has moved House Bill 4092 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Barnard.
It's a question first. Has there been any vetting of this language?
Which language are you
The language in the dash one that's now become the bill. Has it been vetted? So do we know whether this is a clear explanation and whether the people are likely to understand it when they go to vote on it? I mean, it looks fine to me, but I learned a long time ago not to
Everyone is nodding yes.
Yeah, they're okay, they vetted it. Great, then I'm happy and I won't ask any more.
All right, any other discussion? Any objection? Not motion passes carriers. Representative Johnson, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 4092 and open a work session on HJR 203.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to HJR 203.
Vice Chair Hoyle has moved the dash one amendment to HJR 203. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move HJR 203 to the floor with the B adopted as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle has moved HJR 203 as amended to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Motion passes. Carrier Representative Johnson. I'm going to close the work session. Aaron, do we have anything else to go to the order?
And Madam Chair, that completes our work today. We'll be back here on Wednesday.
All right, we're adjourned. Adjourned.